A sharp fall in the number of full-time jobs saw Australia's unemployment rate jump to a 12-year high of 6.4% in January. There were more part-time jobs created last month, but not enough of those to shorten the unemployment queues. The casualisation of the workforce is a trend now sweeping the developed world. But the head of one of the world's largest providers of temporary work says workers should embrace this trend, not fear it. Jonas Prising is global CEO of the Manpower Group. Our business editor, Cheryl Bagwell, spoke to him earlier.
The role that part-time and temporary work has in terms of enabling people who are outside of the workforce to get their first experience or return to work are all tremendously beneficial to the well-functioning of a labor market, such as Australia's labor market, as well as anywhere else really in the world. So it has a disproportionate beneficial impact for young people. Almost 40% of the people that join us are below the age of 25. And we know that those young people that have their first work experience find it much, much easier to find a second job.
What point does the increase in temporary work, which obviously is good for young people, it gets their foot in the door, become a negative for an economy? Because the rise of temporary jobs makes for a very insecure workforce. It's blamed for the fact that we're having very little wages growth. Is it always a force for good that there are more and more temporary jobs and less full-time jobs?
Well, I don't know that I would agree with the statement that there are less of full-time jobs and, you know, more of temporary jobs as a percentage of the whole workforce. But I do think that a lot of the labor market policies that are in place are all aimed at job security as opposed to providing employment opportunities. And that is a big shift that I believe countries have to start making, you know, to really focus on the fact that this is a very dynamic and a very volatile environment and isn't likely really to change. So we have to have policies in place that support people rather than opposing the fact or trying to stop the trend.
What exactly are you talking about? Can you be specific what governments should be doing or are already doing around the world to sort of prepare workforces for the fact that their jobs are not going to last for their lifetimes?
So from a youth unemployment perspective, as I look at best practices and then I look at the countries that have low overall unemployment, but specifically low youth unemployment, countries that have a strong collaboration between educational institutions and companies, supported by government policies that help that collaboration occur and give young people early access to work experiences, which is beneficial to them for many reasons. First of all, they get to experience what it's like and what is required to be part of a workforce, which informs them both in their academic studies on what kind of skills they need and what it is that they're passionate about. And you see in those countries youth unemployment being marginally higher than average unemployment. Whereas in Australia and in many other places, the rule of thumb appears to be about 2 to 2.5 times average unemployment is what youth unemployment is. So we know that that is one of the ways that you can bridge it. Denmark has a sophisticated system of flexicurity, which means, you know, there is an acceptance that you are going to find yourself in transition between jobs sometimes. But as part of the support system and as part of your rights as you work is you accrue credits that you can apply to training. So when you aren't in formal employment, you can apply those credits and get training so that you continue to build your skill set and prepare yourself for the next opportunity. So those are the kinds of examples where you can both facilitate youth employment and where you can help people that are in transition between jobs to make sure that they can still be an active and a participant in the workforce.
So we're talking about governments providing carrots to young people to continue training and education, with governments around the world and certainly in this country looking at ways to plug widening budget deficits and debt levels and such. They're kind of looking at more punitive measures. Like in this country, the government has proposed job seekers under 30, before they can get any unemployment benefits, they have to face a 6-month waiting period of no income support. Do you think that that's the right way to go?
I think it's always a delicate balance because you do want to provide a carrot that people should participate when they can. And at the same time, you have to be realistic and know that not everyone can participate. You could look at some very recent research around the U.S. labor market, and you have seen how the labor market has improved dramatically. Workforce participation has gone up. And part of that is attributed, of course, to the fact that the U.S. economy is improving. Now, research is also showing that the reduction in benefits benefits and unemployment benefits, which were extended during the Great Recession, were dramatically cut back in 2013. So people actually who could work but chose not to work have increasingly come back because the levels of support were reduced to a level where truly those in need still get it. But unless you have an urgent and immediate need that prevents you from participating, you really now have a very strong incentive to participate. And I think research has shown that that actually has had an impact in individuals' willingness to re-enter and re-engage with the workforce.
What about the fact that, as I mentioned, wages growth is flat, not just in Australia but around the world, as inflation falls and there's concern about deflation? Is it, though, fundamentally the effect of a temporary workforce or a growing temporary workforce, that as companies cut costs, they take on temporary staff and those jobs tend to be jobs that don't get increases in wages? I mean, is this an unstoppable force, do you think?
No, I think that wage inflation will, you know, certainly kick back in when you have a good equilibrium of supply and demand. But if you were to say, do I think unbridled wage inflation would occur, I would say no, absolutely not. But I think it's not so much a question of the kinds of jobs and, you know, what kind of work arrangements you have that would determine that. Because in many places, in our business, for instance, you know, and in our industry, I mean, we're a highly regulated industry. All of the people that work for us are our employees, and we follow wage rules and have equal pay in the majority of our countries. So, you know, we don't provide labor that would be any cheaper for the same skill set that you would have if you hired them on your own. But I do think that rampant wage inflation is very unlikely, because companies are competing, you know, for products and services that they want to sell to businesses or to consumers. And those consumers and those businesses have many, many more choices. And what they also have is they have an almost complete transparency to what their product or a service costs from somewhere else. And that, I think, is what actually is playing out to a very great degree.
What's your view? I mean, there's a lot of criticism about the rigidities of the Australian labour market, particularly around what some people call our high minimum wage, high levels of wages for youth, and just the general high cost of labour supposedly in this country. You come from Europe. Would you say Australia is a high-cost labour country?
Well, Australia's high labour cost, which undoubtedly it has, and interestingly, it is in a region where you have a lot of countries being very efficient and providing high-quality products and services at much, much lower cost. It's more of a question of what is Australia's competitive advantage going to be in the future. And clearly, low-skill manufacturing and low-skill kind of work at high cost levels is not going to be the way of the future for Australia. So it's going to be all about making sure that Australia builds industries and professional services and other aspects where it can support high-level skills and high wages. And at the same time, balance that shifting away from high-paid, low-skilled jobs that certainly are going to be growing much, much faster outside of Australia as opposed to within Australia.
That's Jonas Prising, Global CEO of the Manpower Group, speaking with our business editor, Cheryl Bagwell.